Next case, 10-897, State of Ohio versus Joseph Wilson. Mr. Regas.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Alan Regas. I'm assistant prosecutor in Cuyahoga County. I would like to reserve 3 minutes in rebuttal. Thank you. The case before this court represents, I believe, two issues to be determined. This is not a case about whether or not offenses are allied or not. This is a case about what happens when that determination is made at the appellate court. In this case, Mr. Wilson was found guilty of three offenses: aggravated robbery, felonious assault, and kidnapping. The court proceeded to impose a sentence for each of those offenses. On appeal, the direct appeal had six assignments of error. The first three dealt with whether or not he was guilty. Those were overruled. The next three raised three distinct sentencing issues, one being whether or not these offenses were somehow allied. The next was raised whether or not the actual sentences imposed were proportional to similarly situated offenders who committed similar crimes. And the third one was whether or not this sentence that was in fact imposed, the amount of time, was a product of judicial bias. In resolving these three assignments of error, the 8th District looked first to whether or not the offenses were allied, determined that the kidnapping would merge into the aggravated robbery and felonious assault, and then found the other claimed errors to be moot. I believe that's the wrong method of analysis in this case. An appellate court has a duty to determine the errors that were raised that are capable of resolution.
Well, they sent it back for resentencing, so isn't that just a total academic exercise? If the trial court can only sentence on essentially two offenses, right? Is when it goes back, what are they going to be sentencing on?
They'd be determining whether or not they would listen to the state's election as to which sentence should be imposed here. I don't believe that Whitfield requires a de novo sentencing. And I don't think that when we look at this court's history from 2006 to 2010 in resolving sentencing issues and the scope of us resentencing.
But you want the Court of Appeals to go ahead and do an analysis as to whether the sentence that's not ultimately going to be imposed is excessive. Is that right?
What was raised here was...
Because that seems like...
If I can back up.
Yeah.
I don't believe that Whitfield requires a de novo sentencing. Whitfield, the error that's been found when there are allied offenses is not an error in whether count one had X sentence or count two had X sentence. It's the fact that both of those sentences exist. So if there's no error in count one, in this case, for the felonious assault, there was an 8-year sentence. If that sentence is not found to be an error, and the sentence imposed for the kidnapping itself is not found to be an error, then the only thing that's required of the trial court is to find out which sentence the state elects to proceed on. There is no, without error. If I could go back, in 2006, this court decided State versus Saxon. Look to what was raised before the appellate court, said, here's the error, deal address only that error. It also said that sentences are to be looked at individually. They're not part of a sentencing packaging doctrine.
Hey, I'm still not understanding. This is going back. In your view of what the trial court should be doing when it goes back, is is not permitted in some fashion by what the Court of Appeals did?
The Court of Appeals ordered a full de novo sentencing, threw out what happened at the sentencing, vacated the sentences, and said, listen to the state and proceed to sentence anew.
That Mr. means- Rodriguez, there were three convictions, am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. One was kidnapping.
Yes.
One was felonious assault. And the third was?
Aggravated robbery.
The Court of Appeals made a determination that the kidnapping merged with one of the felonious assault, am I right?
It did, and as well as
you merged. Agree with that determination?
I did not raise that before this court.
All right.
I believe that under
so
the facts.
You don't really object if this goes back to the trial court to have the state elect whether the sentence will be imposed on kidnapping or felonious assault, and then the court can conduct that resentencing hearing, correct?
Exactly.
Your objection really is on a different subject. There were two additional matters raised in the appellate court. One is judicial bias in imposing sentence, and the other is that the sentences are disproportionate. The Court of Appeals said, we're not going to review those. We'll let the trial court do it. So your arguments to us are the Court of Appeals should have ruled on those two issues, and the scope of the resentencing hearing is only limited to allied offense resentencing and not to a de novo sentencing. Is that your position or not?
That's exactly our position here. And we base that on the fact that sentencing in Ohio is based upon the offense. So if we look at
counsel,
the aggravated
the first
robbery.
The first sentence was 25 years, correct?
In total, yes.
Total. It was because they were run consecutively.
Yes.
And in reality, the prosecution, there were allied offenses, and the prosecution should have picked what sentence, offense to be sentenced, correct? Which would significantly reduce this 25-year sentence, correct?
It could significantly reduce it. Here,
well, how could it not?
Well, first of all, at the trial court level, the allied offense argument wasn't made. So I would say that we proceeded and believed that those three.
Right, let's talk about remand. It's back to the trial court. What are the trial courts, what's going to happen in the trial court? The prosecutor is going to have to make a choice, correct?
Yes.
As to what sentence, what's the sentence that can be imposed for that offense?
For aggravated robbery, a 3 to 10 year sentence.
Okay.
For felonious assault, 2 to 8 years.
Okay, and here the maximum was sentenced, initially, he had the maximum number of years per offense, and they were run consecutively, correct?
Correct, but it wasn't a maximum on the kidnapping, and it was only 7 years.
Okay, all right. So they go back to the trial court. The trial court's not going to be able to do that type of a sentence and run them consecutively again, so there will be a reduced number of years that will be attached to this defendant, correct?
Correct.
All right, so the bias and the disproportionality that was present in the first sentencing will not be present in the second sentencing, correct?
Presumably, that is one of the outcomes.
Okay, so what good would it do for the appellate court to rule on the first invalid sentence as to proportionality and bias?
It would do two things. Number one, are these sentences proportional? If they're proportional, if the 10 years for aggravated robbery in this case, if there is nothing wrong.
They were invalid sentences. They can't even be subject to a proportionality analysis.
There I disagree that they're invalid. What the error in this case is, under allied, is that there's more than one sentence imposed. I don't see that they're invalid. I don't think that the 10-year sentence on its own is invalid, and I don't think the 7-year sentence for kidnapping is invalid.
Combining them and running them consecutively is an invalid sentence.
I'll say there's two parts, because I think that the first part is that the fact that they both exist is the error, that they're consecutive is an argument of proportionality, is an argument of bias. It's not an argument of whether they're allied. The only error in an allied offense finding under 294125 is that there's more than one sentence. And here, the record is capable of review to determine the propriety of the 10-year sentence, the propriety of the 7-year sentence. When we go back, the state elects. In this case, I can tell this court I'll elect that be sentenced on and serve that aggravated robbery sentence and the felonious assault sentence. I will ask that to be done. But here we have the what we're doing if we look at, say, oh, these are allied, and then vacate everything. We're back to that sentencing package doctrine, where we're making the presumption that the court came up with the sentence in total and didn't sentence accordingly for each offense. And I believe in Saxon, this court addressed that. I believe in Evans in 2007.
So you're arguing that the proportionality and the bias argument should have been applied to each sentence individually, not as to the consecutive package.
Well, not exactly. I'm arguing that the record was clear after the sentencing hearing and that those issues were raised at the appellate court, should have been determined at the appellate court. What the appellate court did was look, oh, these are allied. We're not going to decide that. We're going to give you a do-over. And I don't think you get a do-over to raise new issues. You don't get the second bite at the apple.
Well, what if the court, what if the conclusion from this court is, okay, they go back for the allied choice, and then those two issues can be applied to the new sentence, but nothing else gets, it's not a de novo. You don't open up the whole sentencing. You don't start from scratch. You just get your pick between the three and the two that you're going to merge. And you pick, and now you have a new sentence. Then those two arguments can be applied to the new sentence because they're specifically, I think what the Court of Appeals did, it opened everything, as I understand it, and said the whole case is resentenced. You're saying you just go back and pick, but don't those two arguments still apply to the two that you picked?
Well, they apply to the sentence when it was imposed at the sentencing hearing. Those are capable of review. They were raised as error. They weren't moot. In fact, they should be decided first. Because if we find that the
sentence...
Doesn't
the argument change on excessive, depending on whether it's stacked or it's concurrent?
But that's present in the sentence that's given. So that can be determined. Whether or not the proportionality of the sentence imposed here was proper or not, or whether it was improper, is capable of determination. It was raised. In fact, if it's found to be disproportionate, then he is entitled to a full new sentencing. But since there's nothing wrong or nothing found wrong with the actual sentences that were imposed, the only thing wrong here is that there's more than one sentence imposed on the two offenses. So I would say that he's given the opportunity to go have a new sentencing hearing. He now has the opportunity to actually raise the proportionality argument, which he didn't do to the trial court at the first. He didn't suggest any sentences. He didn't notify the court of any proportionality. None of that was raised before the trial court. So what he gets, because the court is later determined to have imposed more than one legal sentence. The error here is that there's two sentences, not that one is wrong or the other is wrong.
What is your solution as to what we should be doing?
I'd ask that this court find that a remand upon allied offenses is limited to the imposition of the state's elected sentence when there's nothing found to be wrong with the sentences that were imposed.
Should we not be remanding this to the Court of Appeals, under your theory, to rule on the proportionality and the bias, and then the Court of Appeals thereupon remands for the allied selection?
Exactly. That's what needs to happen in this case, because the 8th District did not address those errors as to proportionality or as to the error on bias.
So you're asking this court to address the scope of review on a remand on an allied offense determination.
Exactly.
So, and the scope of that resentencing should be limited to selection of one or the other of the offenses by the state.
Yes.
Is that not clear in the law now, that that's the limited scope of a remand on an allied offense?
Whitfield simply says a new sentencing hearing is to be remanded for a new sentencing hearing. The 8th District read that to mean a de novo sentencing, and that's why they mooted out the other two assignments of error. I don't believe that this court meant to give a full de novo sentencing, but
rather...
So you
want a clarification of Whitfield on a remand for an allied offense determination?
Yes. We read that to mean that it's limited. We read it within the scope of Evans, Saxon, and Fisher, that these issues are to be resolved on, and any remand is to be limited to only that which was found in error. And here the error is that there's more than one sentence, not that there's anything found in error of the 10-year sentence or the 8-year sentence or the 7-year sentence.
Mr. Regas, you've used all of your time.
Thank you, Edit. Thank you.
Mr. Scott.
Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Terrence Scott, and I represent the appellee, Mr. Joseph Wilson. May it please the court, there is no error in this case, and this case should be dismissed as improvidently accepted. Further and quite frankly, the only issue in which the state lost on appeal is the very same issue that the state concedes here today in this court. The 8th District properly applied this court's analysis in Whitfield, and there was nothing in this court's analysis in Whitfield that precluded the 8th District's manner of remand. The state seems to be focusing its argument on Mr. Wilson's likelihood of success on the issues of judicial bias and sentence proportionality at resentencing. As this resentencing has not yet occurred, the state is asking this court to issue what would be tantamount to an advisory opinion.
So, counsel, do you agree that the only role for the trial court is to have a hearing to have the prosecutor determine what offense should be the offense upon which the sentence is imposed and served?
Correct, Your Honor. I believe the state needs to make that election. However, as the bias and proportionality issues related to a sentence that has since been vacated, the trial court should also take those issues into account when it's imposing this new sentence as they continue to be relevant.
Well, don't you think once the trial court gets, you know, everybody back in front of it and it's there for the prosecutor to make the election, and the election is made and the sentence is imposed, and then it's up to the defense counsel at that point to make an argument to the trial court that what you just did is contrary to the judicial bias and proportionality?
Absolutely. It would be for defense counsel to raise that at the resentencing. The point is that Whitfield does not preclude this from actually taking place.
Mr. Scott, going to resentencing, because this is an issue that comes up several times, what is your position on 29-19 regarding sentencing hearings? It seems to me that it says the court shall hold a sentencing hearing before imposing a sentence upon an offender convicted of or who's pled guilty to a felony, and before resentencing an offender pursuant to Section 295307, which, if you go back to that, talks about a court of appeals finding a sentence incorrect. So if I read this section, it seems to suggest that once a court has determined there's an error, there's a resentencing, and under 29-29-19, that should be de novo.
I would agree, Your Honor. When the Court of Appeals vacated Mr. Wilson's entire sentence, the court was essentially saying that this entire sentence is unlawful. The state is attempting to paint a picture where this case is somehow in conflict with Saxon or somehow breathes life into the sentencing packaging doctrine. The reality is the facts in Mr. Wilson's case are wholly different than what took place in Saxon. In Saxon, the Court of Appeals vacated Mr. Saxon's properly as well as his improperly imposed sentences, where it's very clear in this case Mr. Wilson's entire sentence was deemed unlawful. It was clearly in violation of 29-21.45.
But it was an unlawful because they did not because you had not determined they were allied. That's why it was unlawful.
It was, but each.
So is your position then that when you go back for resentencing, you have new mitigation, you now have all new arguments, you have new presentation of the sentencing factors, you have all of that? That's your position on resentencing?
No, I think the term de novo may not have been the best way in which the Court of Appeals could have framed this remand. But I think the Court of Appeals was very clear in that it didn't have enough information in its first viewing of the case to make a determination as to whether or not there was a proportionality and a bias issue. And since it was vacating that entire conviction, the bias and proportionality issue no longer related to that conviction.
So you don't believe that de novo means you get everything like it was a brand new sentencing hearing. You only go back for the election, and then you can raise those issues because they specifically relate to the level of sentencing?
I guess in the classic sense that de novo opens up the entire case, I don't believe that's what the Court of Appeals intended when it sent this case back. I think it specifically intended for, obviously, for the state to make its election, but since this was going to be a new sentence, the question of proportionality and bias were going to be questions that will continue to be relevant.
And how could the trial court address that then? In the manner in which you see this unfolding, mm-hmm. Assume that we accept your suggestion of improving this case. The Court of Appeals opinion is in place. Mm-hmm. It goes back. The prosecution makes an election. I believe he already indicated which choice he would make. Does the trial judge have the opportunity to do a redo on the number of years imposed on the crimes that are selected by the prosecutor, or are those sentences in place, and or does the judge, if that's locked in, can the judge rethink the business of consecutive versus concurrent?
Well, with regard to the proportionality question, it would be up to defense counsel to raise that as an issue at the resentencing. With regard to whether or not the court could adjust the numbers, it would depend, again, on the election that the state made. With regard to the kidnapping, Mr. Wilson only received 7 years. That wasn't the max sentence. So therefore, theoretically, the trial court could increase that sentence after assuming trial counsel was to raise his proportionality question. Or as the court would look at that sentence, if it decided to adjust those numbers, now there could be a potential Pierce problem there if it's the same trial judge and this number was to increase, but that would be something for
Could the trial judge decrease it?
Absolutely. The trial judge could decrease it, yes, Your Honor.
And isn't that what the prosecution is trying to avoid? They just want to go back, and their choice of sentence is announced to the court, mm-hmm. their choice of which offense for which sentence should be imposed, and then everything else stays the same, including the number of years and the determination that these what's left would run consecutive. Is that your understanding of what the state hopes to achieve?
Well, I think what the state is attempting to do is characterize what Mr. Wilson would have as being some sort of windfall if one of his sentences was decreased. What I would say to that is 2921.45 is a statutory, it provides statutory constitutional protections against allied offenses. And when this sentence was imposed, it was imposed improperly. And as Mr. Wilson received multiple sentences for what essentially were individual offenses, this is what was improper. So if on remand, the trial court now receiving this case and needing to impose a new sentence, if it concluded that under these new facts that less of a sentence would be proper, in my opinion, that's not a remand. That's what should have happened the first time around.
And it could do that. But the state believes that should happen is just a hearing. They make a choice between which crime for which sentence would be imposed, and the sentence stays the same for that crime, and the order of consecutive stays.
And what I would say, if the facts in Mr. Wilson's case were analogous to the Whitfield case, that's precisely what would happen. The difference here, though, is in Mr. Wilson's case, you have this allied offenses problem, and you also have this proportionality and bias problem. The Court of Appeals recognized that this case was markedly different from what happened in Whitfield, and they crafted a decision that reflected that difference. So hence you have this remand that on at first glance does seem a little unusual, but given the facts of Mr. Wilson's case, it was what was very necessary.
Mr. Scott, did defense counsel raise the allied offense issue at the initial sentence?
The allied offenses issue?
Pardon me, please.
I'm sorry, the allied offenses?
Yes.
At the initial? Honestly, Your Honor, I'm not quite sure, because the allied offenses issue wasn't in, it's not in contention. The state has conceded that issue, so I'm not quite sure, Your Honor.
Okay. And the Court of Appeals determined that I think the 10-year sentence for robbery merged with the kidnapping. Was that, or was it the felonious assault?
The aggravated robbery merged with the kidnapping, and the felonious assault merged with the kidnapping.
Okay, so they determined the merger. Mm-hmm. And then Mr. Regas would have the Court of Appeals review the proportionality of the 10-year sentence for the robbery and the 8-year sentence for the assault.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't think the Court of Appeals should pass on that at this point?
That would be correct, Your Honor.
Pardon?
That would be correct.
Why would the Court of Appeals not pass on the proportionality of those sentences as imposed?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question? I'm sorry.
If I understand the position that the state is advancing,
mm-hmm.
it is that the Court of Appeals should consider the proposition of law that the proportionality of the sentences as imposed by the trial court as to the robbery and the assault, the felonious assault, are proportional to other sentences imposed.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks the Court of Appeals should pass on that. And I was inquiring whether you think the Court of Appeals should pass on that.
Well, I think the Court of Appeals was, I don't think the Court of Appeals was in the best position to make a determination as to whether or not these sentences were proportionate.
If that's an assignment of error that's raised in the Court of Appeals, why should the Court of Appeals punt it back to the trial court?
Because they vacated Mr. Wilson's entire sentence, and the proportionality related to sentences that no longer existed for all intents and purposes.
Well, had they passed on the proportionality, then the trial court could simply say, because the determination of the appellate court and the kidnapping merges, therefore there are two sentences that exist. One is a 10-year sentence for robbery, and one is an 8-year sentence for felonious assault, and that's the end of the matter. And so I think what we have is the first issue as to the scope of that resentencing,
mm-hmm.
and the second issue is whether the Court of Appeals has a duty to pass on assignments of error that are presented to it.
I would agree. I would agree that the Court of Appeals had a number of choices here. It obviously could have sustained or overruled those assignments of error, which it chose not to do. It mooted those assignments of error. And I think the Court of Appeals mooted those assignments of error specifically for two reasons. One, they related to sentences that had been vacated. And two, they did not have a sufficient record before them to make a determination.
And the basis of vacating the sentence, robbery by itself, 10-year sentence for robbery, is not contrary to law, is it?
The conviction for the 10-year sentence in and of itself is not contrary to law. However,
and the 8-year sentence for assault is not contrary to law.
I would agree. A conviction in and of itself is not contrary to law. Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
So I guess the
go ahead.
The dispute then is whether the Court of Appeals had the power to vacate the whole sentence and give the defendant another second shot at resentencing, or it should have limited its remand to you remand and the prosecutor picks which of the sentences to merge, which is what I thought our case law said. You mm-hmm. just, you remand only to pick which offense. It's not reopen the whole sentencing. that seems to be the dispute between what the Court of Appeals did and what we may or may not have done with our current law. Is that how you see it?
That is definitely the dispute. What I would say is different between the case law being Whitfield and this particular case is, again, Whitfield dealt with exclusively with this allied offenses issue. And this case has this allied offenses issue coupled with this judicial bias and proportionality question, a question that I believe the Court of Appeals wanted some more exploration in because they just didn't have enough information on the record to make that determination themselves.
If there is a remand, if it's a remand under the statute, 292919, says if the case is remanded by the Court of Appeals, then the procedure of a sentencing hearing shall be accomplished. That's what the statute says. So if we're talking about scope, if the Court of Appeals chooses to remand under the statute, the defendant gets a full second bite at the apple. I mean, according to the language of the statute.
Correct, and I would agree. And actually, if we're going to take the fruit analogy out a little ways, I would liken this to a second apple, not so much a second bite of a new apple, because once this new sentence is imposed, that proportionality and that bias is going to relate to that new sentence.
Right.
Counsel, was the issue of bias and proportionality raised at the trial court level at the original sentencing?
The proportionality issue was not raised because there were five other co-defendants in this case. And at the time of Mr. Wilson's sentence, two of his co-defendants had been sentenced. One of his co-defendants had been sentenced on that very same day, and two others had not yet received their sentences. So the proportionality issue was not fleshed out because there was still a lot of information that was still available.
Thank you, counsel.
Mr. Scott, before you sit down, I want one additional question, if you would, Chief. What is the procedure, if you can tell me, in Cuyahoga County on remand? Do the cases go back to the original sentencing trial judge, or are they reassigned randomly to other judges to pick up on issues like this?
Typically on, issues like this, unfortunately, there aren't any other cases particularly on point to this one right here, but typically on remand, it will go back to the original trial judge. Obviously, that would be problematic in this case because, you know, we believe that there is a bias question, a bias problem here.
But it hasn't been passed on by the Court of Appeals, so your view that there is bias is really just your argument because the Court of Appeals, and I think that's what the state was getting at, the state wants the Court of Appeals to rule on it. But when it goes back, there wouldn't be any basis to change the sentencing judge because there's no ruling from the Court of Appeals that there's any existing bias.
Well, the bias would relate to what took place in the actual sentencing of Mr. Wilson. That bias became very evident in the exchange that took place between Mr. Wilson's defense counsel and the court.
So are you asking to have the Court of Appeals review the bias question and make a determination that because of the bias it should go to a different judge on remand?
I'm not. What I'm asking is for when this case goes back on remand, the defense counsel have an opportunity to raise bias if strategically he believes that's in the best interest of his client at that time.
After the sentence is imposed, but not before.
Correct.
You're not going to go back there and say, Judge, you know, based on what you did before, the sentence that was overturned by the Court of Appeals, we think you're biased. You're back to square one with a resentencing, correct?
I would say this. And I need to correct myself. The bias question would be raised before the sentencing. It would be raised, and the defense counsel would have an opportunity to cite to the portion of the record where they believe this bias became evident.
Okay, your time is up. Thank you.
If I may conclude,
no.
Your Honor.
No.
Thank you.
Mr. Regas, you've used all of your time. You can have 30 seconds.
Mr. Regas, does the state believe that 292919 governs remands?
I believe it governs the procedure to be had. It provides procedural safeguards. It allows us to be present to speak, victims or interested parties to be present to speak. It gives the defendant a right to speak before the sentence is imposed. However, I don't believe it goes to what issues are to be dealt with at that hearing. And I think that's a matter of the substantive law and the case law here. Under Fisher, we saw that it's limited only to the imposition of that which was an AR post-release control. Under Evans, we saw that if a specification is sentenced in error, the underlying offense, that sentence remains if it's correct. I don't see anything different with an allied offense finding. The portion that's in error in this case is the fact that there's more than one sentence, not that the sentences themselves should be vacated or in error. And that's why I think the 8th District was wrong and needed to determine those other two issues, which would then tell us,
counsel,
yes,
if,
these are
I,
in error.
Are you suggesting then when this goes back for allied defense issue that the court is required to impose the same length of sentence on these that it already has? Am I hearing you say this as opposed to first we have the merger and then we do the sentencing? Or add the number of years. What are you suggesting?
I'm suggesting that if in this case the aggravated robbery and I elect that's sentenced over the kidnapping, that sentence remains in place because there was no error in the imposition of the 10 years.
Well, how do we normally do this? Do we normally select the fences that'll merge and then we give the term of the sentence, or do we do the term of the sentence and then we merge them?
If this is raised before the trial court and the trial court determines that those offenses will merge, then the state says, I'd ask you to sentence on the aggravated robbery in this case. I would have elected that. One sentence would have been imposed. That wasn't done here. That issue wasn't raised.
The court gives the length of the sentence on that.
Right. So in the usual procedure, yes, that's how it occurs. However, once we determined that there was error afterwards, after the fact, the trial court found that those weren't allied if it had been raised or just sentenced according to the guilty finding, then there is a difference. And I think that this needs to be looked at as not as in terms of resentencing, but in correcting the wrong, which is two sentences, and that can be done by simply vacating one of the sentences.
Thank you, Mr. Regas.
Opposite. Thank you.
It's okay. We're concluded. Take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our opinion. Thank you, gentlemen.